At Nayaki, A, 4th of March, 1967.
Actually, with the imprisonment of in 1950 after the riots, you see the conditions at that time were so that the events of 1950, the martial law period, showed how our abject, our condition was as a people. Now during the martial law, all the leaders were locked up. They had nothing to do with the riots, but they were all locked up. And the curfew was declared, and any person who was seen on the road was shot at. There are examples of some leaders who were dragged from their houses and shot at. And people realized that that the British were treating them like cats and dogs.
Did you personally experience
this? Because my father was one of the leaders. In fact, my father participated in that carol function at Kendi in 1915 May, when the Vesak carol cart came to that mosque, you see, and when they were prohibited to sing. You see, I was present myself. I was 12 years old. There was a huge crowd, one vast sea of heads, from one end of Castle Street to the other. And you could hear a pin drop. My father addressed the crowd and asked them that this was an important occasion, celebration of the birth of Buddha and enlightenment of Buddha, and therefore we must follow his message. He was the Prince of Peace. He stood for Maitreya and Karuna and Mudita and all these things. Therefore, nobody should touch a Muslim. That was the gist of his speech, I remember. But of course, the people, when the Muslims aimed their story, that they aimed a bottle of sand and their carol cart, and there was complete chaos and confusion after that. People were murdered, boutiques were looted, and the whole city was sacked. That was the beginning of the riots.
Now, your father is Mr. P.B. Ratnayake.
P.B. Ratnayake.
Was he charged?
Yes, he was charged. Then the next day, that's a different long, long story. I don't want to dwell at length on that, but he was arrested. He was arrested and locked up in jail under martial law for nearly 100 days. If you read the...
Did they manage to influence the judge and secure conviction? Or?
No, wait till you see, if you read the... Raman D'Souza's 100 days of martial law in Ceylon, you'll get an idea and you'll get an account of this case also. My father's case also is mentioned. In fact, my father was acquitted because I happened to be present. Judge argued that a man could not have deliberately planned a riot and taken a 12-year-old son with him to the center of activities. See?
Who was the judge?
T.A.K. For this what happened during the martial law, they had what are called courts martial. See? And those who went to the courts martial, they were all convicted and hanged. Because they were reprieved later on after Sir John Anderson came. And but my father somehow the case was so complicated against him. There were so many people willing to give evidence against him, hundreds of people, his enemies. He had incurred the displeasure of all these headmen, top headmen. Lone fighter against the evolution of the headman system. So they brought in false witnesses, hundreds of such witnesses. The poor commissioner could not make a case out of it. All conflicting. Then the martial law had been withdrawn after Sir John Anderson came, and this case had to go before a district judge.
So it's a civilian.
He heard the case and he found that the prosecution is a false story and he was acquitted. Well, anyway, all these people are innocent. Leaders are innocent. They have nothing to do with it.
What made the British jump to the conclusion that it was an organized outbreak? And not only against the Muslims, but it was organized against the British.
British. Number one, the British were at that time fighting a war in Germany, against Germany. Secondly, there were troops here, British troops, Marathis, Punjabis and so forth. I suppose they wanted to open a second front. One thing, and of course our own people said, our own some Silanis, he must have carried tales and told the Pierre Dhammar and so on, that this must have been by the Buddhist leaders.
I have some evidence about this, you know. Do you know who is supposed to have carried these tales?
Various names are mentioned, but I don't think it could be said very definitely who was responsible for it. But the names of some of these very distinguished leaders who were close to the Queen's house, who had the ear of the governor, they must have related. And the governor went into a panic. He went into a panic and started arresting, shooting, this thing, released the Marathis, Punjabis, all these fellows, and then there was this chaos. Then, of course, on representations made, Sir John Anderson came and tried to pacify the people. That was the beginning of an agitation for the reform of the constitution. All this due to the fact that we are a slave nation, legitimate council is just a sham. Only some representatives are there.
Correct to say that D.S. Senanayake and others never forgot this slight and the way they had been treated in 1950.
Yes, they may have remembered it all the whole time. Eh? Obviously, when you are treated like that for 100 days, they must have. Anyway, they were felt that the country should be freed. And there was popular backing for it. See, there was popular backing.
What about the temporal society? I presume
that is, that's the earlier chapter of the story. Mm. These people started the temperance movement in 1912. And that's how they became popular and led a movement. That's how they became Buddhist leaders. Mm. And the government pounced upon the temperance leaders who were Buddhist leaders. Those are the people who are imprisoned.
Would it be correct to say, I mean, I'm not denying the sincerity of those who put forward temperance, but they were all politicians, and were they trying to do something on the lines of Gandhi, in a sense of trying to create...
They were genuinely sincere. All the temperance workers, they were not interested in the reform of the constitution even. They thought that this was a blow. The excise ordinance that was passed in 1912, imposing liquor shops on Ceylon. It was a blow to the people of Ceylon because it was carried, that measure was carried in the teeth of popular opposition. And they thought it was intended, like, you know, opium in China, it was intended to degrade, deprave the morals of the nation and the Irish country.
But whenever this sort of cry is raised, it's also true that sometimes that the greatest supporters of prohibition or temperance are the bootleggers.
Ah, yes. They must have fun. At that time, as far as I recollect, there were no bootleggers. There were no illicit sales and they were not organized as they are now. That's a development of recent times. But at that time, the temperance people were very sincere, genuine, social upliftment workers. See, they are very genuine men. All of them. They are not interested in votes. They are not interested in coming to parliament or state council. They were genuinely interested in the welfare of the people. Drinking is a bad habit and prohibited by the religions. So that's how you see these people locked up and they started the reform movement. Hello? Yes. Speaking. Aye. Hello, Your Excellency. Good morning. Haven't seen you for a long time. About? Yes, that's so.
Yes,
Is that so? Yes. 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 Now, who are your agents in Ceylon? Newton is out. Is he out? Yes. Now, whom do you want me to contact? People's Bank. Yes. I'll tell you, I don't know the technicalities of this business. Ask Newton to come and see me what the bank should do, that the bank should guarantee. Is that so? You know, the Bank of Ceylon had refused, isn't that so? Bank of Ceylon had refused. I can contact the finance minister and ask him to speak to the bank manager. Yes, yes, ask him to come and see me tomorrow? Morning, between 9 and 12. Yes. Right, thank you. Yes. How are you, Excellency? All right? Yes, thank you. Come and see me sometime when you are free, Right. So that you say, when they were locked up, they started this. Then, of course, all the leaders, not only the Buddhist leaders, Sir Panam Arunachalam, Ramanathan, James Peary, Vijay Swamir Vikrama, all the Christians also joined. So they found that what was done to the Buddhist leaders was a great injustice. And they started the Reform League, the Reform Movement, various things. Meetings were held at Arunachalam's place and so forth. And the result is a series of reforms. You must be knowing
this. Yes, I know the
18 reform, 23 reform. One occasion they were not satisfied, they all walked out. Another installment of reforms. Finally, in the Legislative Council, they had a majority in the Finance Committee of unofficial members. Mm-hmm. The government found it difficult to carry on.
You were not there, were you?
No, I was not in it. The only man...
You didn't give evidence before the Dharma Commission?
No, I didn't. My father gave evidence. Because my father went, I didn't go.
I would like to, before I take the Dharma, I would like to raise another aspect which can be considered a sort of constituent element of nationalism. That's this protest against the wasteland. I believe you lived in Dumbara, not in Kandy. From your personal experience, do you know of any families or lands which belong to the villages which were sold by the government?
Practically all the Kandy branches lands.
But was it by the government or sometimes by local individuals?
No.
Headman too?
Headman, they also participated. Headman, these Maduangulas and all these people on a large scale.
Mm-hmm.
But my personal experience, now take for instance, in my own village, all those lands which belong to the Kadvastra estate were village lands.
Kadvastra
estate. Mm-hmm. See? All those lands belonging to the railway now, they belong to a family called Rajapaksas. They had a seat to also. If you run through some of my speeches, you'll get a lot of information on that point. And this particular question that you asked. See?
But the point is, before any plant or company could buy a plot of land, it was advertised for 3 months. And even before the advertisement, the headman of the area was supposed to report whether there were other claims to the land, you see.
What did you see? Headman acted in connivance. And who knows? It appears in the government gazette.
Mm-hmm.
The government gazette was in English. And does it ever reach a villager? There are probably one copy of the government gazette reaching the government agent. He threw it aside. And how is a poor villager like Ranganji Rajapaksa Kahal to know that there is a government gathered with regard to his lands?
What about the surveyor coming? When the surveyor came along?
Surveyors also came long afterwards. See? Mm-hmm. It was an unequal battle that the village was fighting. Unequal battle. See, the wasteland ordinance says all lands within the Indian provinces, which are uncultivated, uninhabited, are presumed. Mm-hmm. It's a presumption against the owner. Huh? Hello? If the charge. Ah, yes. No, we'll have another number of charge. Oh, it's not funny.
Yes, I know the wastelands ordinance, that clause. But I noticed that the land commission, even after the land commission, when the Silnis came to power, they didn't change it.
They didn't change it because it has now, what is the close of the door when the horse had fled, you see?
Yeah.
Practically all the land had been appropriated by the crown. And now it was easier for the crown, after the Senanayaka's legislation, to dispose of it in the way provided in the new land development ordinance. It was better, see? Now of course, now all the, under the land settlement ordinance, whatever claims people had were being settled. Mm-hmm. I think they are going on even now with the settlement.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
See? And those who had the son as a saw seed too, so whatever it may be, they are able to produce those things and get their claims settled.
What do you think of the land settlement department in the 20s and earlier?
Well, they functioned earlier, they were pro-British.
Were they grabbing land?
They declared in favor of the crown. See? Villager had no evidence. What evidence?
Why, oral evidence? They went around the land, so they could give over oral evidence.
But they had oral evidence as against the act. See? The onus of proof is on him, no?
Mm-hmm.
The whole village comes and says the government doesn't believe it, no? But the act says, presumed to be crown. See? Presumed to be crown. See, the onus of proof is on him. Now he doesn't produce a document. The other people produce harnesses, they were able to produce seed tools. And that's only an infinitesimal few who had harnesses. Total number of harnesses are all registered. It's a few in number. So the kings used to give land like this. That's all. There's no document.
What about the
Sikh
rulers in the
20s
and earlier? Participation in the sense that there were some Sudanese who bought up land and then sold it to companies or cultivated it themselves.
Must have done that, yes. See, that is very small number.
I mean, the Vandaputans and those people?
Vandaputans, did they buy from the crown? I am not sure about
that. From the individuals?
From the villages.
They are also,
they bought from the villages. Now take Deyathilaka, this Argam estate, Anguranketa estate.
Pardon?
Anguranketa estate. See, if you take the plan of the Anguranketa estate, see, they haven't got deeds to back the plan. They get a few deeds from the villagers,
mm-hmm.
survey the whole bloody village and occupy. See, the same villagers are used as laborers. And after 30 years, they ask the crown to settle it on them. Because it's planted, tea is grown, there is a plan, other fellows have no deeds, villagers have lost all, now it has been converted into a state, no evidence. See, my goodness me, it's a long, long story. Some of my speeches will give details.
Right, taking the Donamo constitution, what did you think of it?
A very good constitution. If we were given, if the governor's powers are removed, see, and we were given complete self-government, that would have answered our purposes better than it is.
Yes, but when it was proposed, it was accepted with great reluctance, and at the start, wasn't there a lot of criticism?
Yes, but Buttanaik opposed it.
Why?
He didn't want to say anything. He liked the cabinet system. But he knew that under the cabinet system, the Prime Minister is virtual dictator. He didn't want Senanayaka to be Prime Minister. He didn't want Senanayaka to enjoy... And he didn't want Senanayaka to enjoy all those powers, past powers. He told me, no, no. He said, He told me himself, Ratnayake, you don't know the Senanayakas. Once he becomes Prime Minister, you will be mere slaves. He didn't like it. That is why he objected to it.
But I thought it was E.W. Pereira who led the main attack on the Constitution.
Yes, earlier. That is that aspect of it which deprived us of freedom, the governor's powers, the presence of the three
officers
of state, and public service commission. He objected to those things.
But wasn't he really attacking the form rather than the practice, in the sense that once the constitution got going, the ministers found that they had fairly considerable power, and that the governor didn't really use his reserve power very often?
Except, you see, that was at the back of their mind, that everything was being done with the knowledge, with the consent of the governor. See, any important issue relating to public servants or the expenditure of money, they knew that the governor had the authority to knock it off.
Yes.
I'll give you an example. I moved a cut of 5 rupees in the salary of the chief secretary or the gardener employed in the evening. And I made a speech, I forget the reason, argument, why should he leave such a much again? Why should he have so many bungalows? See, and moved a cut, carried by a large majority. See, within 24 hours it was restored by the government.
35 powers. You also attacked that question of passage allowances.
Yes, all those items.
But don't...
At that time, they were... the governor's government defended the rights of the public service, particularly the rights of the European public service. See? So that the European public service became an imperium in imperio. They were resisting the orders of the ministers. In fact, Mr. Senayake had to fight 5 years to get told to remove a certain irrigation man.
Kennedy.
See? So that was a struggle with the governor's government, because the heads of departments are not loyally cooperating in the majority of them.
That's one aspect. I'd like to take it up again. This question of passage allowances, that was one of the conditions of service. And wasn't it a bad thing to try and remove that?
Because we couldn't afford at that time. The funds, the finances were getting low.
Mm-hmm.
And all that was done was, instead of going once in 4 years, the proposal was that they should go once in 5 years, right? It appeared to be eminent and reasonable. And many of the Europeans said that was wrong. But they fought it on principle, that it is untouchable, inviolable, part of the constitution.
And it's opposition led by E.W. Pereira to the...
And mind you, that applied to all citizens, not to the government. Why can't it apply to Brown citizens? They also have the privilege of going into once in 5 years. My goodness, me today there'll be rats and bloodshed if there's a thing like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that E.W. Pereira and others were attacking it because this was a novel form of constitution and they thought they're trying to push us to the sidelines? They were thinking in terms of the Westminster model.
Yes. He was thinking of the Westminster model. He was keen about the cabinet system.
Mm-hmm. But then if you remove, change the constitution as he implied, in other words, it would have been virtual self-government, you would
have. Yes. Yes. If you had removed three things, one, the three officers of state and their powers, the public service commission and its powers, governor and its powers, we had self-complete self-government.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we had about 7/10 self-government, plus, of course, that reserve powers of the governor to certify any bill or motion.
What did you think of the grant of universal franchise at that stage?
Very good, because after all the poor people must have a say, no?
But, I mean, can you recall your attitude in 31? Because did you have doubts about it then?
No. Because, you see, up to 31, the whole Legislative Council was really a metropolitan body.
Mm-hmm.
See, the outlook of most members, even the most progressive, was urban and metropolitan. And they looked at national problems in a very broad way.
Mm-hmm.
See, but today, we are, our minds are taken to every hut and home, every worker, and his, people like Gunasinghe, for instance, used to make long speeches on the trials and tribulations of the workers.
Mm-hmm.
But that was Gunasinghe only, yeah? See? Now I used to give long descriptions of the plight of the peasant, but there is one single individual.
Mm-hmm.
But the vast majority of members, being lawyers, and the Kalamusavan people, their outlook was
urban,
metropolitan, I should say, and they were not interested in the problems of the peasant and the worker, see, at that time. But that changed, you see, gradually. Of course, even the leaders didn't resist the demands of the worker and the peasant, see, and in fact, the ministers, they were all elected on the adult franchise, you know. They work for the people, you see.
Can
but today, under the present system, with this large and enlarged parliament, you hear more about the trials and tribulations of the peasant than before, you see.
Mm-hmm.
That is a great change. And more militant,
mm-hmm.
They demand. See, the member today demands this and demands that, doesn't he? In the olden days, they asked for a favor. Today, they demand. See?
Can you tell me something about your election struggle with Kindersley?
Yes. That is, Kindersley was government agent. He hoped, and most of my voters happened to be Indian voters. About three, I had about 5,000 to 6,000 Indian voters. He thought he would get the Indian voters on block.
How was it that they voted for you?
They didn't vote for me. Some of them may have voted for me, but not all. They were divided. You don't mind Professor Barukov being here?
No, I don't.
He's a Mongolian Lama interested in a prophet delivering the message of simplicity, sincerity, poverty and silence. Those are very significant words, huh? And he lives that life. Dhanapal, you want me?
Yes, I have for that.
Don't worry about this person. He stands for sincerity, simplicity and poverty. Hello? Saite.
So, what do you think helped you to win in that election?
Ah.
The fact that he was a white man?
Oh, no, I was a very popular candidate. My father was very popular.
Yeah, I was. Dumbara, is it?
Dumbara, yes. I was practically a stranger to the place, but I was, I also had a good background. I was practically living with Dhanagarika Dhanapala, a great leader of the Sinhalese.
Oh, when was this?
Well, I attended school for myself. Come, Vivananda, you know Mr. Roberts?
Oh, well.